Hare Krishna, our very great fortune once again to hear His Grace Vamsi Vadan Prabhuji in Sridhar Mayapur addressing to all the Bhakti Shastri devotees on Bhagavad Gita, unit number 2 from chapter 7 till 12, and today we are covering chapter 12 on 2nd of January 2014, and this is day 10 morning session. Hare Krishna.
Okay, Hare Krishna. So yesterday we were discussing the 11th chapter on Vishwarup, and we finished the 11th chapter. So from this whole chapter of Vishwarup, which we did in two sessions, so somebody could reconnect some important points. Okay, thank you. Some other points, some other principles, I think.
You were making the point that Arjuna, he has a higher level of relationship with Krishna as a friend, but Krishna gives him divine eyes. And this divine eyes in this circumstance is actually giving him, is actually kind of like putting him on a lower level.
Yeah. Yeah. From a transcendent platform to a more
on reverence,
more material. It's a more material platform. Devavishnu. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Familiarity breeds contempt. When one is too familiar to a friend or guru or somebody in position, you may tend to neglect this other or take it for granted, or I think the guru is a human being like you.
Okay, fine. Okay, thank you. So, sorry for the distraction.
You mentioned a dream that one devotee and Śrīla Prabhupāda preaching to the devotee. You mentioned, well, if you don't step up and preach, Śrīla Prabhupāda's going to do it anyway. So you're making that analogous to Krishna wanted to glorify the devotee. They were dead anyway. But Arjuna, if you want to step up and fight, you can step up and do that.
Yeah, so what was the important principle there? The important principle in that context? What's Krishna telling Arjuna to become? Yes, an instrument, simply become an instrument. So ultimately the Lord is capable of doing everything, but then if we have that desire, then we can become instruments in the Lord's hand and help Him in His mission, which of course ultimately the Lord Himself can achieve everything. But then the Lord can, but if we desire, if we have that sincere desire, then Krishna can make us instruments in His mission, and thus we can take the credit for doing some service in the Lord's mission. One or two more points? Yes, Sadhu Kumar? You have something to say? I think you should say. I thought you raised your hand, so so say something anyway.
Yes. It was the first time Krishna was showing his universal form. He showed this form before.
Mm.
It was the first time he was showing.
Yes, so what is the specialty of this form?
Because I didn't request for, not for himself particularly, he requested for other people to understand the glories of Krishna.
That's right. What was the specialty of this form, which how was this form different from other universal forms that he did show before? What is the specialty of this form?
It was never shown before.
Yeah, so it was never shown before, but there was a universal form which was shown before. So how does this differ from those forms, universal forms which... When did Krishna show the other universal forms?
Mother Yashoda.
Yes, Mother Yashoda and
Duryodhana.
Okay, so essentially these two. So how does this form differ from that?
It's
yes, it's Kala Rupa. Very, very ghastly, terrible form where Krishna is crushing all the heads of the warriors on both the sides and there's blood dripping down his lips, and so it's very ghastly form.
Is also mentioned that this form is not available in the spiritual world?
Yeah, that's the Vishwarupa is not the spiritual world. It's only a temporary manifestation in the material world. That's right. Hmm? You already said something. So, somebody else? Okay.
Like
Kevala
Bhakti.
Hmm?
So, the points where we are like 1155. Being discussed like Mat Karma Krit, Mat Paramaha, Mat Bhakta. So it has been like described by doing this, like this is the criteria to achieve the Lord, it's complete.
Okay, fine. So towards the end Krishna is, how one can see this Sudhu Darshan, this extremely rare form, the two-armed form which is extremely rare, how one can actually see that form? By the practice of Kevala Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. Only by that practice can one actually see this two-armed form, and how to perform that Kevala Bhakti, Krishna is speaking in the last verse.
This is the essence of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, Prabhupada writes that verse is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, no, no.
And Krishna showed, from the universal form, Krishna requested him to show his four-headed form, and then Krishna will show his four-headed form, and then his two-armed form. And this is also to indicate that we don't approach Krishna directly in like in two-armed form, human form, like in Vrindavan or something. We have to approach it first to Sarvabhakti, on reverence,
yeah.
Like in the deity.
Yeah.
Although the forms are Radha Krishna, but
yes.
We're actually worshipping in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan.
Yes.
Radha Krishna accepts that.
Yes.
Offering.
Yeah, that's right. That's the reason why first of all Arjuna told him to show the four-armed form and then the two-armed form. So one of the points was this, that is, he's making the point that how we cannot approach Krishna directly as Radha Krishna worship, because that's only on the platform of spontaneous love. And so on our platform we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of awe and reverence, like Lakshmi Narayan worship. That's the four-armed form. And so therefore, first of all, he showed the four-armed form and then the two-armed form. That's one reason. And what's the other reason? Why he showed the four-armed form first and then the two-armed form? Yeah, to show that all incarnations ultimately come from Krishna. Even Vishnu ultimately comes from Krishna. To make this point, also Krishna is doing that. Okay, fine. So now we will begin with the 12th chapter. When is the pen drive coming? So till that point, maybe you just blank the screen.
Yes.
Or you can, okay, maybe, oh, that's fine, okay, that's fine. Okay, we're starting with the 12th chapter. Entitled, Devotional Service. Okay, let's recite the first verse. Arjuna Uvasa Evam Satata Yukta Ye Bhakta Svam Paripasate Ye Satyaksharam Avyaktam Tesham Ke Loka Vittamaha. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? So why is Arjuna asking this question? Yes, Abhijan?
I mean, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, you can guess, no problem.
It seems like, I mean, because some people maybe a little bit carried away with the personal form.
Carried away with the personal form means what? Wait, let him speak, Huh.
But just seeing Krishna's impersonal form and not taking Krishna's personal portion.
Okay, fine, okay. Any other thoughts? Why is Arjuna asking this question at this point of time? Okay, no.
Maybe he wants to know what's more pleasing so that he could satisfy him more, so that he could choose the path to go.
Good, that's interesting. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Yes?
If you want to show about comparing all other persons.
Okay, he wants to make sure which path is the best. Okay, okay, fine, that's right. So essentially that's the purpose why Arjuna is asking this question, because he has seen this universal form, he has seen the form of the Lord, and previously Krishna also described about the impersonal worship, he described about demigod worship, he described so many other things before, and so Arjuna, for himself, he wants to make sure which is the right path so that he can follow that. So he wants to confirm which is the right path. And Prabhupada makes a point here. Towards the end of the purport, last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada writes, and so factually there are two classes of transcendentalists. Now Arjuna is trying to settle the question of which process is easier and which of the classes is most perfect. In other words, he is clarifying his own position. This is the reason. He is clarifying his own position because he is attached to the personal form of Krishna. He is not attached to the impersonal Brahman. Okay? So he is attached to the personal form. As we saw that he was definitely, when he saw the Vishwarup, he really didn't like it. Because the Vishwarupa is not some form which can be loved. It's a ghastly form. You can't love that form. Nor can you feed that form, and you can't dress that form and all that. So there's no loving service which you can do. And so Arjuna, when he saw that, he was terrified and he said, no, enough is enough. Please show me the four-armed form and the two-armed form. And so he definitely had an attachment for the two-armed Shyamasundara form of Krishna. And so here he wants to clarify his own position, whether his attachment to the personal form of Krishna is right or not. So that's the basic reason. So he wants to know whether his position is secure. Okay? The impersonal manifestation either in this material world or in the spiritual world of the Supreme Lord is a problem for meditation. Actually, one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best, because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time. Okay, so this is another important point. He experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best, because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time, because that's what Krishna showed, that all other forms are ultimately coming from that personal form. And And there was no disturbance to his love for Krishna. This important question asked of Krishna by Arjuna will clarify the distinction between the impersonal and the personal conceptions of the Absolute Truth. This is a very, very important and relevant question, because this is a question that has been pondering, that has been pondered over by transcendentalists practically since time immemorial. This question has always been there in the minds as to which is better, the impersonal worship or the personal worship. And there are so many groups on either side, so many clashes, so many things have taken place over the ages because of this distinction. And so Arjuna is asking a very relevant question here, for especially for our own application and most of our preaching, because there's such a vast majority of people who are attached to the impersonal Brahman and impersonal worship, and so therefore this question is something that is very, very relevant. Okay, so this is a small chapter with only 20 verses. The first section, 1 to 7, Bhakti superior to impersonalism; 8 to 12, progressive stages of devotion; and 13 to 20, qualities that endear one to Krishna. Though a short chapter, there is a lot of nectar that is hidden within these few verses, and a very important topic, very, very important chapter on devotional service. We're going to the first section. First verse, we just read this. Okay, this short commentary by Vishnu Chittanka, somebody would like to read that.
Arjuna heard the great superiority of Bhakti at the beginning of the topic of Bhakti in the following words: Arjuna Bhakti Dharma Shanta Sanyanta Rajana Sarananda Jyomam Sanyanta Dharma Mohamata. But I consider he who worships me with faith, with my attachment, greater than all types of devotees. Arjuna desires to hear of the superiority of Bhakti, even in his summary, to ask the question.
Okay, so Krishna had already described the superiority of Bhakti, but this is, Arjuna wants to confirm that. Go ahead.
Devotees described as being constantly engaged, worship you as your Samadhi God, mentioned at the end of the last chapter, Mat Padma Sin Mat Padma. Others worship the Brahman, Akshara, with no apologies, Abhyanta means Nirvishesha, described in the Shruti statements such as Etad Vai Dad Akshara Vidati Brahmana Adivan Yad Simam Anani Vahakshram. O Gauri, that Akshara, which is not wide, not small, and not short, is called Brahman. In the Vihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.8.9. Among these two types of persons who know yoga, or the best known yoga, yoga vittamaha.
Right, so that's the word which Arjuna is using here, yoga vittamaha. The best knowers of yoga. So among these two types of persons, who are the best knowers? That's yoga vittamaha. Right?
Who knows the best process for attaining you? Or do they not know the process for attaining you? In a comparison involving two items, using the form yoga vittara, which of the two types to know yoga better would be used? The word yoga vittama should be understood to suggest that among the better of the two types of knowers of yoga, yoga vittara, who is the best knowers of yoga? Yoga vittara.
Right, so a technical point that he is making, that these two, the knowers of these two types of yoga are both yoga vittara. Both are knowers of yoga. Right? It's not that one does not know anything and one knows something. So both are knowers of yoga, so therefore both are known as yoga vittara. But amongst those, who is the best? So yoga vittama. And that's the reason why he is using that term. And Krishna is giving a very definitive answer, non-ambiguous answer, absolutely no doubt about it. And what's the answer? Sri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Vesha Mano Ye Mam Nitya Yukta Upasate Shraddhaya Pariyopeta Teme Yukta Tama Mataha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. Krishna is giving such a straightforward answer. Then still, why don't people understand? When Krishna is giving such a clear answer, what is, those who fix their minds on a personal form, It's so clear. Then what's the problem? In spite of having such a clear answer, why don't they understand?
Maybe it's the desire issue and translation also the issue. The desire of people to define how they translate the words.
Okay, fine. Any other thoughts on that? Why? Why don't people understand in spite of there being such a clear instruction here?
I think we saw that the attachment to the moon, that's why they go to demigods.
Okay, so in this case, what's the attachment?
They're not able to come to the pure level of directly worshipping Krishna. Doing bhakti. Earlier Prabhupada said, bhakti is not easy, the yogis can do that, and then why don't they come and do this process? It's not easy. It's not the purpose. I'm guessing that would be one reason.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Yes, Shankar. Envious of
Krishna's vision, they want to take that vision in the next second.
Okay, possible. That could be one reason. Yes, they are envious attitudes. Anything else?
Maybe the other scriptures translate the word different.
Which other scriptures?
Not other scriptures. Other Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, so. So yes, there could be different commentaries, that's right, and there are so many impersonalists who are giving impersonal commentaries to the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada would always condemn these impersonal commentaries, that's right. But the question is, why, when Krishna is saying things so clearly, then why at all should one give an impersonal commentary? Yes, Prabhu. What idea?
Of becoming one with the...
Okay, so they are attached to that conception of becoming one with the Supreme. Okay, fine, that's right, yeah?
Because they think that like 7.4 of that, some of that, they think that Krishna is actually, he's a person, but he's not the Supreme Person, he's the one who's speaking. He represents the actual Brahman, which is called Vidyapati.
Okay.
And they get mixed up. Not clear for them.
Okay, fine. Okay, one last comment. Okay, that's an important point. Yes, that's correct. They do not get the mercy to understand. Without that, as we discussed before, in that conversation between Sam Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya, quoting from the Srimad Bhagavatam 4th canto, that they don't get even a trace, lesion. They don't get even a trace of the Lord's mercy because of not having received that trace of the Lord's mercy. So then they get bewildered by all sorts of things. And as rightly pointed out, it also depends, as today Janamas Prabhu also was explaining in the class, that it depends on one's own approach. The Shastra reveals himself, he's a person, the Shastra reveals himself in accordance to the mood in which one approaches. Therefore, the Shastra is called, okay, desire tree is one, revealed scripture. The Shastra is called revealed scripture. The Shastra reveals, because in one sense, not in one sense, it's an absolute fact. Both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are non-different from Krishna. And we read that Krishna himself is saying about Yoga Maya Samavritaha, I'm covered by my internal potency. So Krishna, he remains covered over and he does not expose himself unless one has that sincerity in approach. And so if one has conceptions, or if one wants to still become God, one wants to become great, and one is having envious mentality, so one is having all these other mentalities, then the same Shastra reveals and gives different messages. That's what he was explaining in the class today, that, you know, the Vedas, they're all Vedas. But then, to one who approaches the Vedas with an enjoying mentality, then he finds only the Karmakanda section. And he thinks, oh, very nice. Vedas are also telling me to enjoy, very nice. But then it's only when one actually approaches the devotee and hears from the devotee that he gets the right message. And for that definitely some sukruti is required. But then the point is, it depends on one's approach. Then the shastra will reveal accordingly. And so even though it is the same shastra, somebody, as Prabhupada says in some lectures, somebody wants to make a business on the verse of Bhagavad Gita. So then the Lord will think, oh, this fellow wants to make business, huh? Very nice. So why should I reveal myself? So you write your own nonsense. So he never understands because he's not approaching with the right mentality. Okay? And so that's the reason why, even though the entire message of the Bhagavad Gita is so very clear, still one gets different understandings. As Prabhupada would often say, Krishna is saying, surrender to me. And then there are some commentators who say, no, one should not surrender to Krishna, one should surrender to something within Krishna and so on. But why? Why go the roundabout way when the message is so clear? And the reason is this, it depends on one's mentality of approach. In the teachings of Queen Kunti, it's described that how Queen Kunti is saying that this verse, Maya Jamanika Channam, it's similar verse like the Yoga Maya Samavrita verse. So she's saying that how Krishna becomes covered by the curtain of Maya. Maya Jamanika Channam. Achannam is covered, he's covered by the curtain of Maya. In that purport, or rather in teachings of Queen Kunti, in relation to that verse, Srila Prabhupada says there are two reasons why people fail to understand correctly. The first reason he says is stubborn obstinacy. They are stubborn and obstinate. Obstinate for what? You know the meaning of obstinate, right? You know? Obstinate. Yeah. So, somebody knows exact. Prabhu, you know exact meaning of obstinate.
Well, they won't give up their sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. They are simply too attached to their sense gratification and their conception of becoming God. Yes, Prabhu.
In America, we distributed over 3 million meters, and we've been preaching for 40 years. And society has become so degraded mentally that right at 100% of the population cannot conceive of God in the personal form. The only thing the great majority of people can do is use this finger to point upwards and say, I believe in a higher power. That's close to most of them, including almost all of the Christians. So when questioned about God, will almost universally point upwards and say, I believe in a higher power. But it has to be a voice. It cannot be personal because their minds are so degraded in Kali Yuga that they can't get that. Even with 3 million years and 40 years of preaching.
Yeah, that's right. So yes, so the definitely near the lifetimes of sense gratification makes one so attached to the sense gratificatory propensity that it becomes so difficult to give up. And so that's the real, as Prabhupada writes, stubborn obstinacy. Someone is obstinate, and that's the reason why then Krishna doesn't reveal himself in spite of actually being so clear.
Krishna can fulfill all material desires, but then we can. What's the problem?
Say it again.
If Krishna can fulfill our material desires better than we can, what's the problem?
What's the problem for whom?
Oh, for accepting Krishna as a personal conception of God.
Uh-huh. Okay. So yes, the problem is that if I accept Krishna as a person, then I have to accept that yes, a person means, that means I have to fulfill his desires, I have to worship him, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to follow his laws, he's a person after all. So, but he's impersonal. Where is he? Does he have any desires? No. So what's the question of fulfilling his desires? So whose desires to fulfill? Mine, of course, isn't it? So therefore the impersonal conception is actually, as Prabhupada said, covered atheism. It's actually covered atheism. And Srila Prabhupada told this nice story to explain this point. I don't know if you have heard that story of once a king, he gave a parrot to a person to take care, and he told the person, "See, I'm giving you this parrot, very dear to me, very dear. You please keep this parrot. But at no point of time I ever want to hear from you that this parrot is dead. The day you say that this parrot is dead, you are dead." I try my best. So I took the parrot home and was taking good care. But then, by the laws of nature, eventually by the influence of time, the parrot died. But the man was terrified. He was thinking, how can I give this news to the king that the parrot is dead? He's going to cut off my head. What can I do? So he was very upset, and so he went to a friend and he asked him some suggestions. Friend told him some suggestions. Okay. So the man went to the king, and so the king asked him, So how is the parrot? Man said, "Parrot is good. Very fine. Parrot is good." King was very happy. "Oh, really? Very nice. Thank you for taking care." At the same time, I would like to express some concern. What's it? Only thing is that since the last few days, the bird has stopped flapping the wings. "Oh, really? Why? Don't know, but it's not." Anything else? Also, since the last few days, somehow even the legs are not moving. "Oh, really? Even the legs are not moving? Oh." Okay, any other concerns? Also, the parrot has stopped eating also. "Oh, stopped eating also. Oh, that's very bad. What to do? Parrot is not eating." So then he said, any other concerns? So he said, it has been noticed that the eyes are shut and they never open. "Okay, oh, that means the parrot is dead." The man said, "Sir, I didn't say that, you're saying." You got the point?
Yes.
So Prabhupada said the impersonals are like that. They are saying the Supreme Lord has no eyes, no ears, no this, no that. Then what are they saying? That they say, we don't say that.
You are saying.
Yeah. But indirectly, they are saying God is dead. Right? So therefore, in one sense, impersonalism is covered atheism. And it gives one a sanction to fulfill one's sense gratificatory propensities, that's all. And as Prabhupada explained, the last snare of Maya is to become one with God. So, everyone is trying to become gods in this world to some degree. And ultimately, when one thinks, I am God, the supreme controller of everything that is, there is no greater sense gratification than that. So that's what's impersonalism, and that's the reason why, in spite of there being such a clear message over here, still people don't get it. Yes, please.
Other question about the word for word text. Prabhupada is translated as my personal form. Is it the word for word? I can't see any reference to my personal form.
Mayi? Krishna is standing there.
Okay, fine.
What else could there be? Krishna is doing that. So now, in the next few verses, he is describing that impersonal worship.
You're saying about two reasons why people, one is the stubborn and the other one.
Lack of knowledge. Okay, now, text 4. Krishna is describing that impersonal Brahman. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. Right, so all these are the qualities of the impersonal Brahman. Beyond the perception of the senses, all-pervading, inconceivable. Right, it's inconceivable. So what do you do about it? Unchanging, fixed, immobile, impersonal conception. So this is what one is supposed to meditate on. So it's not so easy. We're having a sufficient tough time trying to control our mind and senses, even though we have the deity right in front of us. And then what to speak of a totally abstract, imaginary, impersonal conception. So you can just imagine how really tough it is to meditate on this sort of impersonal form. And where's the question of developing love for this impersonal form? So it's something which is very abstract and really very difficult. Okay, but then Krishna is saying, at last they achieve me. How's that? How do they achieve Krishna if they are worshipping the impersonal Brahman? Yes, the yoga ladder. So on which step of the ladder they are? Yes, they are basically jnanis. They are basically jnanis. And so, speaking about jnanis, and maybe we'll go a little bit more into details of this. Maybe a little bit revision on that would be beneficial at this point after the fifth verse. So let's go through the fifth verse and then I'll come back to describe about the jnanis. Because in the fifth verse, Prabhupada is giving a whole detailed information about Jnana Yoga and the path of Jnana. Let's recite the fifth verse. Klesho dhikataras tesham avyakta satta chetasam avyaktahigati dukkam dehavasvetavapyate. But those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. Klesha, klesha, it's full of klesha, full of troubles. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Okay, so this path is full of difficulties. It's full of so many challenges. And what are those challenges? Prabhupada explains in his purport. And Prabhupada begins by saying, the group of translators who follow the path of the inconceivable, unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord are called Jnana Yogis, and persons who are in full Krishna consciousness are called Bhakti Yogis. Now the difference between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga is definitely expressed. The process of Jnana Yoga, although ultimately bringing one to the same goal, is very troublesome, whereas the path of Bhakti Yoga, the process of being in direct service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is easier and is natural for the embodied soul. Why is it natural? Why is the process of bhakti natural for the soul?
Because you are internal.
Yes, exactly, because that's our constitutional position. Jivir Swarupoi, Krishnero Nitya Das. That's our constitutional position. So therefore, serving Krishna is something which is very natural, and thus it becomes easy because that's natural. The individual soul is embodied since time immemorial. It's very difficult for him to simply theoretically understand that he is not the body. And that's what the impersonalists are trying to do. The impersonalists, simply by the study of Shastras like the Upanishads and by practicing severe austerities, are simply trying to come to that conception, that understanding that I'm not the body, I'm spirit soul. So it's a very theoretical exercise that they're trying to do. They're simply trying to understand on the basis of their own mind and intelligence, I am not the body, I am soul. So it's not so easy, it's very difficult. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga accepts the deity of Krishna as worshipable because there's some bodily conception fixed in the mind which can thus be applied. Of course, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form within the temple is not idol worship. And then he distinguishes between Saguna, Nirguna worship. Okay. And then he gives the example, okay, then he's speaking about the Archa Vigra. He's given the example of the mailboxes. So if it's an authorized mailbox, the letter goes. Similarly, the Archa Vigra, which is established by the Acharyas, that's a bona fide form, and one and the Lord accepts worship through that form. Now, I'm going to the next paragraph after that. So, for a devotee, there's no difficulty in approaching the Supreme immediately and directly. But for those who are following the impersonal way to spiritual realization, the path is difficult. Why it is difficult? Now, Prabhupada explains that. They have to understand the unmanifested representation of the Supreme through such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads. That's the first point. Okay? Now the Upanishads, they are, we have the Sri Upanishad by the Master of Srila Prabhupada translated into English, but most of the Upanishads are in Sanskrit, and therefore Prabhupada writes, they have to learn the language. That's the second reason. Third reason, understand the non-perceptual feelings. It's totally abstract. Non-perceptual feelings, because it's totally abstract. There's no form, there's no deity, so it's very difficult to perceive. There's no relationship. So therefore, and realize all these processes. This is not very easy for a common man. One devotee was explaining it, it's just like this. And not only that, actually, it's not mentioned, but we understand they perform severe austerities. They perform severe austerities to understand, to basically detach themselves from the body. So in summers, surrounding themselves in fires on all four sides, five directions, four sides, one from top. So, and in winter, submerge themselves in ice-cold waters up to the neck, and rains and whatever. So they perform severe austerities to come to that understanding, I'm not the body, I'm soul. right? And right. Yeah, so this is how a jnani looks.
Wow.
How many would like to become like this?
I'm already small.
I doubt it. Right, so and you will actually you will only find jnanis in places like that. You know, this seems to be somewhere in the Himalayas, somewhere, some cave, something. You don't find jnanis walking around so frequently. Maybe you'll find them at Kumbh Mela. So one devotee was saying, it's just like this, it's just like, you know, if you're put in a room, okay, you're kept in a room, say you're told to stay in this big room, this room is quite big, you're told to stay in this room, all the doors and windows locked, right, even the curtains will be drawn, and there'll be a whole stack of Upanishads kept over here, Vedas and Upanishads, for you to read, and maybe twice a day somebody will open that window and drop a carrot. That's all. And you can spend your day throughout reading the Vedas and the Upanishads and trying to find out about the Absolute Truth. So who's ready to do that? Yes, you're ready? Haribo! Maybe we could experiment on that. Oh, one carrot a day? Yeah? Yeah, the Naga Babas, what happened to them? Are they? Oh no, no, the Nagabhavas I suppose really don't have any philosophy. Right, these people definitely have some philosophy. Okay, so the point is it's very difficult. It's very difficult. The path of Jnana Yoga is actually very difficult. It's full of pleasure, it's full of difficulties, and Prabhupada further compares that. And then further down Prabhupada says, a person of Krishna consciousness engaged in devotional service simply by the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. This is a very interesting statement. Simply by the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, simply by offering regulative obeisance unto the deity, simply by hearing the glories of the Lord, and simply by eating the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the Lord, realizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. So, Prabhupada is again repeatedly using that word simply to show how simple this is in comparison to the path of Jnana Yoga. And that's why Prabhupada repeatedly, simply, simply, simply. So easy. So that's a fact. It is very easy in comparison to this. And then he says, there is no doubt that the impersonalists are unnecessarily taking a troublesome path. Now not only the path is troublesome, then what happens? With the risk of not realizing the Absolute Truth at the ultimate end. Right, they have to go through all these difficulties, and at the end what happens? There is no guarantee that they even realize the Absolute Truth. So even after going through all these difficulties, there is no guarantee of getting the goal. So you just see. Such a difficult process. But the personalist, without any risk, trouble, or difficulty, approaches the Supreme Personality directly. Okay, and then Prabhupada is talking about a few quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we would like to show. I just put these important points from the purport, but this commentary is good. Somebody like to read?
This verse describes a little of their interior position. Those who are attracted to only Brahman
abhyakta sakta chetasham, who desire only realization of Brahman, undergo excessive difficulties in attaining it, because he, by what means at all can something without qualities be made manifest? That goal is attained by the jivas endowed with bodies, devanapi,
dehavadbi,
dehavadbi, only by undergoing suffering, dukkham, by undergoing suffering.
Right, so the goal is attained only by undergoing suffering. Right? Because the basic reason is because the jivas have bodies, they are covered, they have bodies, and they are supposed to, and so whatever is there within our perception around, everything has a form. Right? Everything that we see around has a form. So now, to think about something which is formless becomes very difficult, because it becomes, as Prabhupada is saying, non-perceptual feelings. One is supposed to understand something which one cannot perceive with one's imagination, because everything that one has within one's conception has a form. So now to think of something which does not have a form is like something out of imagination. Okay, let's complete this. Go ahead.
The senses have the power for particular knowledge, such as sound, not for something which does not possess particular qualities. Therefore, stopping of the senses is necessary for those who desire knowledge of their personal without particular qualities.
Right, so for them, stopping senses becomes necessary. Right, why? Because the senses have the power for particular knowledge such as sound, not for something which does not possess particular qualities. Right, so in this world, the senses normally, they have What do the senses do normally? Yes, they want to get in touch with sense objects which have some qualities, right? Which have some qualities, some manifest qualities. Every sense object has some quality. But here they are trying to achieve something and understand something which has no qualities. So therefore, they have to stop the senses so that the senses can now perceive something which does not have qualities. So therefore, for them, it becomes necessary to stop the senses. Go ahead.
But stopping the senses is like stopping rivers. Stopping the senses is difficult.
Go ahead.
Sanat Kumara says,
Okay. Go to the translation.
The devotees who are always...
Actually, this is a very beautiful verse actually. Maybe we can recite. Yat pada pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya karma shayam gratitam utkrata yanti santa tatvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha shrotro ganasta maranam bhajavasudevam.
The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome horizontal desire for fruitive activities, because this is very difficult. The non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in devotional service of Krishna, the Son of Vasudeva.
Okay, so that's the point. So the point is that the worship of the Supreme Lord and cutting off the hard knotted desires within the heart is very difficult, because everyone has material desires and they want to fulfill those material desires. And so even the jnanis and yogis, they have desires, but these desires are very subtle. Right? So they have advanced from the gross material desires to subtle desires, but still they have desires. Right? But if one wants to get rid of all desires, the only way is to ultimately worship the Supreme Lord. And the other example, the other quote of the Bhagavatam which is there is Brahma's prayers. He's saying that the yogis and the jnanis, their path is like, he gives an example, like beating of empty husk. If you beat empty husk, what do you get?
Empty.
No, you get something. What do you get?
Fatigue.
Yes, fatigue. That's the only thing that you get. The only thing that you really get out of that, out of beating empty husk, is the trouble of beating. That's all. And so that's all what they achieve. So he says that the impersonal path is just like that. Okay, you can read this translation of this. Okay, before that there's another word. Okay, go ahead, quickly.
ocean of Nessus is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet you will overcome all dangers. Furthermore, even that goal of the personal Brahman, which is attained by such suffering, is attained only by having a mixture with bhakti. Without bhakti to the Lord, the worshippers of the impersonal Brahman obtain only suffering and not Brahman. Brahman says, Tesham ashau kleshala eva shishyate nanyam yatha tulam
kusnapagatinam.
As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is struggle.
Right, so this is the path of the yogi, the jnanis. So the only gain that they get is trouble, nothing else. On the other hand, the devotees, they take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. That simple fact of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord makes all the difference. That's what makes the devotees superior to everyone else. Taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which the jnanis and the yogis don't do. They are simply trying to understand and achieve their goal simply by their own endeavors. And because they don't have shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, therefore, the only gain is trouble.
We have two questions. My first
question is, if bhakti yoga is the highest and the most valuable, why is the process the easiest? Why is it not the most difficult process?
Yes, it is the highest and it is the easiest because Krishna makes it easy. Krishna is making the process easy because you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean.
So why does it get to a goal lower than Krishna harder?
So what's the problem? Yes, Mr.
Anand? The problem is renunciation. In your life, renunciation and service, it only becomes the easiest way when the renunciation comes first. And as the renunciation becomes more and more effective, the path gets easier. In the beginning, with little renunciation, it's very difficult, but very little renunciation. It's fun, but it's very difficult. It takes a lifetime of renunciation for it to finally get to the point where it's easy. And once it gets easy, and all the renunciation is built up, then your material desire is satisfied because you have none left.
In one purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the process of devotional service is easy, but the practical application is difficult. The process is easy, but the practical application is difficult. Why? As Prabhuji rightly said, since lifetimes we have been totally engrossed in sense gratification. So, it appears very simple. The only thing that you have to do now is gratify Krishna's senses instead of your senses. So simple, isn't it? Gratify Krishna's senses instead of your senses. So simple. But, it sounds simple. We may end up maybe with even a lifetime not being sufficient to achieve that. So what is required, what Krishna demands on the path of devotional service is surrender. That's what he demands. Once that surrender is there, and we'll be reading in the next few verses, then Krishna makes the process very easy. But to get to that point of surrender, giving up all one's material desires and simply focusing on Krishna's desires, Krishna's satisfaction, oh, that's not so easy. Because we are, and just like today morning class, Prabhuji was telling, we are experts in sense gratification. Prabhuji was saying, you don't need a guru for getting knowledge how to engage in sense gratification. We are experts in that because we have been doing that since lifetimes. So now the expertise is simply to be dovetailed, and instead of satisfying one's own senses, one should satisfy Krishna's senses. But the practical application becomes difficult because it's lifetimes of attachment to that sense gratification.
If an impersonalist or a jnani is trying to perceive a non-form, how is that? What do they think of? Because to imagine, you still have to imagine a form. So what are they?
Most probably, you have to contact some yogis for that, or jnanis. That's why he's saying the process is difficult. That's what he's saying. You know, so exactly, that's the problem. What you said right now, that is the problem. So how can they imagine something which is non-perceivable, which doesn't have a form? So what do they think of? So then some of them may land up maybe thinking of some light and something like that. Maybe it was like that. So that's what makes it difficult. That is exactly what makes it difficult. That's what Prabhupada is explaining here. Yes,
they initially take up the personal form, but they think that it's material. I mean, they they say that, yeah, this process is difficult, but just to focus the mind, imagine a form, any form of the Lord,
yeah,
is as good as it's okay, any form you take is okay. Then, ultimately, it's not the form that's important, it's the formlessness that's important. So, as you get to advanced level, kick off the form and merge into the things. It's like, go to that, kick the level. So then any path is okay, any God is okay, any form is good. Initially they say that you can focus on any form. Mm. Then you go to formless.
It seems that my experience.
Yeah.
Yes. So ultimately all what one gets is trouble, that's all. And then Srila Prabhupada explained that even when one comes to bhakti, finally, by the association of some devotees, if one comes to bhakti, I'm reading towards, almost towards the end of the paragraph, by the grace of some devotee. Did you find that? The last paragraph. Beginning of the last paragraph. Our fifth line. Fourth line. By the grace of some devotee, such a transcendentalist, highly learned in the process of jnana yoga, may come to the point of bhakti yoga or devotional service. At that time, long practice in impersonalism also becomes a source of trouble because he cannot give up the idea. Therefore, an embodied soul is always in difficulty with the unmanifest, both at the time of practice and at the time of rest. Right, so ultimately, if by the association of some devotee one comes to the path of bhakti, but one has already become so attached to that impersonal conception that it becomes difficult to give up that conception. So it's a problem both in practice as well as in the final point of realization. So it's always a problem.
Some people may say, for example, you're trying to trick the evolution of the soul by following some kind of a law which is so-called shortcut by doing this bhakti yoga. You know, we're just, Prabhupada mentioned the elevation. And there is a saying that the free cheese is only in the mouse catcher.
Hmm?
Free cheese.
What's free cheese?
Free cheese.
Cheese,
yeah. Huh? It's only in the mouse catcher.
Uh-huh.
So what can we answer to such kind of person? You understand the question?
Yes. So there was one purport previously, if you remember. Prabhupada is saying, Prabhupada is asking a similar question. Prabhupada is saying, yes, there are some people who say that the path of devotional service is very easy and the path of impersonalism is difficult, then still why do they choose the difficult path? No, the simple reason is because it gives them sense gratification. This is subtle sense gratification. To accept somebody else as a master, I am his servant. Not so easy. Not for you. Whatever little experience I have had in my practice of devotional service, I have definitely seen one thing within our own society. There are always conflicts to different degrees between superiors and subordinates. You agree or not? You can go anywhere around the world and you will find this as a common feature. Why? Nobody wants to accept somebody as a boss. Nobody wants to surrender. That's the last thing one would like to do. The modern conception is, come on, stand on your feet, be on your own, make it to the top. Why have you to be subordinate to someone? Forget it. That's the modern idea. Not only is this a modern idea, but that's the idea of the conditioned living entity since time immemorial. And so, it's all, therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained, all these are different forms of sense gratification. Some may be doing gross sense gratification, somebody may be doing subtle sense gratification, but it's all sense gratification. So, the jnanis, they basically want to be free from material miseries. Oh, this material world is miserable. I don't want these miseries. Okay, sir, why don't you serve the Supreme Lord? Sorry, I can't do that. That's more miserable. So, that neutral state, the Brahman realization is said to be a neutral state where there are no material miseries, so it's said to be a state of shanti. Oh, let me remain in my shanti zone. Shanti, shanti. Please don't disturb me. No one disturb me. Let me be on my own. That idea of surrender to the Supreme Lord, very difficult. We can all, each one of us, we can ask ourselves this question. When some senior devotee gives us some instruction which is a little difficult to follow, what is our reaction, at least on a subtle plane? I guess I can't do this. Why should I do it?
Why me?
Yeah, or maybe why me? Find someone else.
It's wrong.
What?
It's wrong.
Okay, yeah, so all these are different conceptions of saying you're wrong. Huh? Yeah, that's too difficult. So, you know, we have been rebellious since time immemorial. And to give up that rebellious tendency and subordinate oneself to a superior. And then somebody may say, okay, I surrender to Krishna. But Krishna says, no. You say, you have to surrender to my devotee. His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was explaining in one class why the Rithvic philosophy is attractive. They say, surrender to Prabhupada. Surrender to Prabhupada, no guru. Surrender to Prabhupada. What's the test that you have surrendered to Prabhupada? Ask him.
I'm going to hear a question like that, but it's not going to be Prabhupada.
What's the difficulty? You can ask him, isn't it? You understood the point?
No.
So he said, it's a convenient way you can sit behind Prabhupada and say, I'm surrendered and surrendered, and go behind Prabhupada and do all nonsense. He's not going to come out of his deity form and chastise you. So you can do whatever you want. You see, the conditioned soul is just looking for different ways of sense gratification and basically being rebellious. So all these are different, whether it's impersonalism, whether it is that the jnanis who are impersonalism, or the yogis, they want mystic species, or all these other conceptions are all different ways of sense gratification. Some may be gross and some may be subtle, but they're all different forms of sense gratification. And therefore, when we talk of kevala bhakti, shuddha bhakti, it's not so cheap. It requires one to give up all that sense gratification propensities and say, Krishna, I have no other desire save and except yours. Whatever you want, I'm ready to do. Not for you. The conditioned soul has been simply used to a lifetime of sense gratification. And that's the reason why the jnanis are ready to do so much of tapasya. The yogis are ready to do so much of tapasya. They're ready to do that. But to accept subordination to Krishna and his devotees, So we were just discussing how the association of devotees is so very important. No, association. Oh, to live among so many other people. Oh, it's so difficult. So many people. So many ideas. How are we going to work together? No, sorry, sir, it's too difficult. I'll go alone. I'll be on my own. You'll have to do a lot of austerities, never mind. But I can't submit to somebody else. That's too difficult. Right. That's the reason. Therefore, though, Prabhupada, the Acharyas, they say, simply take shelter of the Lord. It appears to be simple, but there is one thing one has to give up,
in order to make it simple. You know what? Exactly. The false ego. That's the only thing one has to give up, the false ego. That's the last thing to go. Too late, girl. Once one does that, then what Krishna does? Boats. He provides the boats. Come on. Cross the ocean. Very simple. Just sit in the boats. And as Bhagavatam describes, the whole material ocean, which is full of so many dangerous sharks, it all becomes reduced to water contained in the hoof print of a calf. It's not even mentioned cow. It's a calf. How small? Then do you require a boat to cross that? Prabhupada says, even a child can cross. You don't require a boat actually. You don't even require a boat. But it requires only that one thing. Take shelter. That means surrender. So, that's on these paths of jnana and yoga, there is subtle sense gratification. Of thinking oneself independent, thinking I am God. So all this is subtle sense gratification. Yes, they have given up gross sense gratification. But there is subtle sense gratification. This is very
good. So, should we contradict ourselves by saying then, well, we actually say that it's easy, but actually it's not easy. So you take our non-easy way. So how should we present it?
Yeah, so therefore, it is easy. We present it that way. We present it that way, that it is easy. And it is definitely easy from even logical point of view. And that's what Srila Prabhupada is explaining. This is actually difficult. Why? As Prabhupada is explaining that here one cannot engage one's senses. One has to starve one's senses. But on the path of devotional service, one can engage one's senses. So it is easy. Definitely it is easy. But then the point is that as one is engaging the mind and senses in Krishna's service, one gets gradually purified. So the point is to take shelter of Krishna. That dependence on the mercy of Krishna, that's an important factor that makes all the difference. And so that's what makes devotees superior to all these other people, that dependence on the mercy of Krishna. And therefore we discuss that whole topic on grace. So being dependent on that mercy is something which is very, very important. Then definitely it's much easier than these paths. I was just hearing lecture from Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is saying about chanting. He says, even if one is committing offenses while chanting, no problem. All what one has to do is continue chanting. Continue chanting. And then, as you continue, it acts like a medicine, and one will come to the purifying stage. One does not have to give up. So that's what makes the process simpler. Because one is not depending on one's own endeavors, but one is depending on Krishna's mercy. That makes the difference. Whereas all these people, what are they doing? They don't have Krishna's mercy. And they're only depending on their own endeavors. And the reason why we're going into great details of all this is because a proper understanding of this will actually help us appreciate bhakti. And will make us understand how bhakti is so superior to all the other processes. Just it requires that surrender to Krishna. That's all. If we are ready to do that, then what Krishna is ready to do for the devotee, Krishna is going to tell in the next few verses. Okay, so, one last question on the topic.
What is actually the difference between the process and the practical application of means?
Okay, that's a proper statement. The process is easy, but the practical application is difficult. Yes, the process is easy because, as I was saying, one simply has to engage all one's senses in Krishna's service. That's all what one has to do. But at the same time, the practical application of that is difficult because one has to surrender one's false ego basically and accept Krishna as a master. That's what one has to do, and that becomes difficult because one does not want to accept subordination to someone else. That's what makes it difficult. But if one is ready to do that, then definitely it becomes easy. And the 6th and 7th verses, Krishna is contrasting this difficult process with the path of devotional service. Where's the remote on? That's right. Okay. So here we find that Krishna is contrasting this impersonal worship with the worship of the Supreme Lord, with his own worship and what he does to those devotees who surrender. Ye tu sarvani karmani mai sanyasya matparaha ananyena eva yogena mam dhyayant upasate tesham aham samuddhata mrityu sansara sagara bhavami vasiratvata maya veshita chetasa. But so he's comparing, till now I have described the impersonalist, but for those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, mai sanyasya matparaha, giving up all the activities unto me and being devoted to me, ananyenaiva yogena, without deviation, engaged in devotional service, always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Krita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Bhavami nurturat means very soon. What does Krishna do? Aham means I personally. What do? I pick them up from mrityu samsara sagara. Right, so somebody read this quickly.
Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to change himself by yoga practice to other planets. Rather, the Supreme Lord, by his great mercy, comes at once riding on his bare bird carrier, Garuda, and at once delivers a devotee from material existence. Although a man who has fallen in the ocean may struggle very hard and may be very expert in swimming, he cannot save himself. But if someone comes and picks him up from the water, then he is easily rescued. Similarly, the Lord picks up the devotee from this material existence. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness and fully engage himself in devotional service.
Right. Here you find these amazing purports of Prabhupada. He always is using this. You can see here again. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness. Why? Because on a comparative platform, Krishna consciousness is much easier. So that's the reason why Prabhupada is always using that simply, easy. So definitely it's much easy. And what is the result? As far as the jnanis is concerned, we just discussed, what is the result after all the difficulty? Huh? Yes? Only trouble. There is no guarantee even of their achieving the impersonal Brahman. Even that guarantee is not there after all the trouble. But here, what is the guarantee Krishna is giving? Krishna is personally going to come on the Garuda to deliver the devotee from this ocean of material existence. See the difference? All what one has to do is what? Worship me, give up all activities unto me, devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, always meditating upon me, fix their minds upon me. That's all of that. So, by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, because that's what we depend on. That's what makes the big difference between devotional service and the other path. They are thinking we can do it on our own. And here, therefore, the Trinadapi Sunichana verse is so important. that why? Because it requires humility to accept this fact, I cannot do it on my own. I am absolutely, totally dependent on muscle. It requires some humility to accept that fact. And when that humility is there, then one can engage in devotional service without deviation. And then for such a devotee, then it's very simple. Then Krishna will just come and pick him up from Mrityu Samsara Sagara. Okay, we start at this point. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Please come up 10 minutes. Hare Krishna.